You're in the loop. We're here to discuss the ups, downs, and sideways of the sport of figure skating and maybe give you plus five GOE along the way. Let's introduce this week's hosts. Hi, I'm Evie, and I certainly am never taking the stamina I usually build up watching a normal season of skating for granted ever again, because I'm absolutely exhausted after this week of Worlds.
Hi, I'm Yogita, and I am greatly regretting my decision to become a figure skating fan.
Hi, I'm Kite, and I'm feeling like the Brooklyn Nine-Nine gif where Jake Peralta just plays the guitar and screams.
Moving on to Ice Dance.
So, for our podium for this Ice Dance event, in gold we have Victoria Sinitsina and Nikita Katsalapov representing FSR. In silver we have Madison Hubble and Zachary Donahue representing the USA. And then in bronze we have Piper Gillis and Paul Poirier representing Canada. Okay, one positive thing about this Ice Dance event. I wanted to give a shout out to the commentator, Mark Hanratty, because finally the ISU has hired a commentator that knows something about ice dance, and it's so nice considering the last couple that they've hired for major events, for the senior events. You can tell that they have absolutely no idea what they're talking about when it comes to dance.
Some of them didn't know what they were talking about skating at all to begin with.
This is very true. Even with commentators like Ted Barton, who's followed the JGP and Ice Dance for ages, some of his commentary just doesn't really like go into depth about the technical side of things. And obviously Mark is an ex-ice dancer, and so he brings that to the table. And I found a lot of it, just his commentary overall, I think, was pretty good throughout Worlds. Like, in comparison to the other commentators the ISU was hired like last year, I think he is far and away the best out of them.
I hope they keep on Mark full time as their commentator, because truly was a gift.
I appreciate anyone who just doesn't talk over the top of a program. That's it. I either want minimal commentary during the actual like program or no commentary at all. Let me focus on the skating itself. Obviously, this past season has been extremely rough for everyone on this earth, but I think in no other discipline was it more evident than how undertrained everyone is as a whole than in ice dance. Like, the difference in quality, especially considering this is Worlds, you know, we're so used to seeing ice dancers at kind of a stable level of quality throughout the season as a whole in a regular year. And this year we're watching a bunch of skaters who are undertrained or have had serious health issues because of COVID, and you're watching it and just the level of quality overall isn't there, and it's distressing to see. And also, you know, the ISU, why the hell did you make this event happen? But I feel like with dance, the problem was that even though everyone was a bit shaky and the skating quality wasn't there, the scores overall were extremely confusing. It didn't seem to change that much from the overall trends we've been seeing for the last couple of seasons.
I was kind of surprised at some of the scoring in the programs, because they were, at the very start of the competition for me at least, seemed lower than usual, which I was like, yes, that's right. But then we started getting into the top teams and they started scoring typically around where they usually score, and I was like, no, that's wrong.
And you think about how many of the top teams here train at Gadbois, and how they have had to face with, you know, the shutdowns and lockdowns in Canada and having limited exposure to ice time. And then on the Russian side of things, you've had camps like Zulin's camp that has just been completely overrun by COVID. And you could tell by the way they skated there that they are definitely undertrained and not in peak form. And it was really distressing to see. And then on the Russian side of things, we've had major ice dance camps, and in fact, many major training bases in other disciplines as well, that have been completely overrun by COVID. Like, every Russian dance team here had at least one half of the pairing with a previous infection. And with Sinitsyn and Katsalapov, Victoria's case was so severe that she had a partially collapsed lung. All the teams here, not just the Russians, were clearly undertrained because of their individual circumstances, and you could really see that in each of their performances. Like, overall, if we're comparing the skates we saw here at Worlds 2021 with programs from 2019 and 2020, you can look at the like overall quality of the skating at any of these events and see remarkable differences in each team's skating quality, whether that's reduced speed and ice coverage, twizzles that are unstable and not as in sync with each other, or like teams being very visibly out of breath or tired by like halfway through or by the end of their programs, or lifts looking labored or not as smooth on the entries and exits, or even in some cases changed to make them slightly easier overall. And like, if you're looking just at the rhythm nets, the patterns, if you compare them with the Finstep we saw last year, like while most of the top teams hit the majority of their key points here as well, the actual placements of the patterns on the ice were kind of all over the place. Like some teams were starting their patterns way too far right, and so by the time they got to the second half, they were running out of room to complete their patterns. A striking amount of teams like went way too far up past the center of the rink in the first section as well. And like these sorts of errors would usually factor into GOE of the pattern, but that's only if ice dance scoring wasn't fundamentally broken for these top teams, given how the judging panel just repeatedly awards high GOE no matter what the actual quality of the skating and the pattern is. So like all of these small, like somewhat superficial errors just shows that the teams hadn't had the same amount of practice time with these programs that they would have in a regular season, which is, you know, not on them as teams. They've had a rough go of it this last year. But when you're looking at the judging, it just doesn't seem to reflect all that here. The scoring overall, like even in the rhythm dance, just looking at the score distribution here in comparison to like last Worlds, remember in 2019 we kind of had Papadakis and Cicerón like way out front.
Yeah, they had like 90.
Yeah, it was like 90 something, and then everyone else was just squished together in the low 80s, and it stayed like that in the free with Papadakis and Cicerón remaining in the front. And similarly, like this year we had Sinitsyna and Katsalapov out with a not as much of a gap between the rest of them, but still with a 2-point lead. And then you had second and fifth all within 3 points of each other. And you're just like, this is exactly the same kind of score distribution we've been having for like the past 3 years. It's not like as bad, but it's still really evident. And it does not reflect the level and quality of skating that we saw in this event.
It's super frustrating because I think a lot of judges just see a team and they're like, by default, this is how much GOE you always get on this element. So we'll give it to you, even if you aren't up to par per usual. And it's really frustrating because I saw a lot of really, really questionable grades of executions being given out for really bad twizzles, really bad lifts.
What's even the point of dance scoring? Because like, I'm going to be 100% honest here. Like the scores in both the rhythm dance and the free, but especially in the free dance, it seems like someone wrote out a bunch of scores last season before Worlds was supposed to happen for like the top 6 or 7 teams, said, oh yeah, that's about where they should be. And then just when the event got canceled, just stuck that piece of paper in a drawer somewhere just to take it out this year and look at it and go, okay, well, we have these scores. We should probably give them these ones here because we know where these teams should be scoring. If you take a look at the free dance, I think the program where this disconnect is most jarring is with Madison Chalk and Evan Bates from the US. They recycled their snake free dance from last season, so you know this is a program with a decent amount of mileage on it already. And I think anyone who watched Ice Dance last year would have a pretty good picture in their head of like the overall level of quality to expect when they usually skate it. So it's really easy for us to realize just by watching them here, like just how undertrained they are in comparison to a normal season, and how that stamina built up from a regular season's worth of competition and training just isn't there in this case. Like by the halfway mark of the program, you could see that Evan was like clearly starting to struggle keeping his energy up. In some places, like his facial expressions, like disengaged with the performance of the program because he was clearly trying to reserve his energy and focus to his elements. And you could see that his power in his steps and turns was just all focused in his knees, and his speed overall slowed down significantly when it got to that second half of the program, which like as a viewer just screams to me that they've had a significant lack in preparation time going into this event. And again, they train in Montreal, which, you know, they had to deal with lack of access to ice time due to lockdowns there. But it seems that the judges didn't seem to think that any of that was out of the ordinary, evidently, given how they got a 127 in the free, which is just 2 points off their personal best, which they got at the Grand Prix final in 2019. The free skate level overall here was so varying in levels of quality, and yet the scoring overall has not changed based off the scores we've seen in the last two seasons, and as a someone who's been following Ice Dance really closely this past quad, it is like hair tearing out levels of frustration. What does this say as Ice Dance as a discipline? Like, are we not, we've been talking about for years that the scoring system in Ice Dance is basically broken, but I just don't know what to say at this point, because you can't look at this event and the scoring and tell me it makes sense.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, like, we already knew dance scoring was broken. First and foremost, was the most political of all of the events, and that whoever won was basically the whoever had the most politicking power. And sad to say, Russia has the most politicking power now in dance.
And Italy has the least.
In an ideal world, Vignari and Fabri would be winning the dance event, but this is not an ideal world.
They had the cleanest set of programs out of everyone. Their rhythm dance was really strong, and their free dance was also really strong. Like, Piper and Paul aren't so much rhythm dance skaters as Guinan and Fabri are, so, like, I would have definitely had them at silver, at least. And then, probably out of, like, the teams that we saw, I would have put Hubble and Donahue on the podium for bronze. Like, it's the scoring overall just makes me, like, I didn't even bother to wake up and watch the free dance because it was really early in the morning for me, my time, because I knew how it was going to end. I knew who was going to win just based off the rhythm dance scoring. Like, you couldn't have, there was no way that after that rhythm dance that Sinitsyn and Katsalbov weren't going to come home with the gold. And I was just like, well, I'll watch it the day after. I won't watch it live because I know what's going to happen. Another standout part of this event was actually who wasn't there. Reigning world champions Papadakis and Cizeron. So they announced a few months back that they would withdraw from the event, citing multiple reasons such as lack of competition and training this season, COVID-19 protocols such as quarantines, and the psychological wear and tear of preparing to compete during a pandemic. And both Gabriella and Guillaume contracted and subsequently recovered from COVID-19 in July as well. And they also cited that the Beijing Olympics are their main goal for the near future and wanted to kind of focus all their energy on preparing for the Olympic season, which is coming up. So considering the state of everything right now and their health in the off season, like, it's obviously understandable that they not want to risk coming to Worlds to compete. And also for the French Federation to, you know, protect their best chances at medaling next year. This decision, however, did mean that France's opportunities to gain extra Olympic spots in dance were pretty much non-existent. And as a result of their withdrawal, France only has one dance spot for the Olympics next year, which will undoubtedly be filled by Papadakis and Cizeron. There's also something to be said on how this withdrawal might affect their rapport with the international judges overall, like in context with the rise that we've seen of Sinitsyn and Katsalapov over the last couple seasons. We saw Papadakis and Cizeron lose the European title to them last year, and now SK have won this Worlds after being quote-unquote like truly untested against another team with as high a scoring potential as themselves here. And now with a world title under their belt, like, I wouldn't at all be surprised if SK scores continue on their incline next year. And if that's the case, how Papadakis and Cizeron will react and adapt their approach to suit these trends in scoring going into the Olympic year could be a really big factor on where they end up on the podium at the Olympics next year. Okay, let's go on to talk about some of the standout performances at this event. Let's talk about Piper and Paul a little bit more in detail, because world bronze medalist Piper and Paul is just the one saving grace of this Ice Dance.
The only good thing that happened in Ice Dance was Piper and Paul winning a world medal. And
they were so happy in the kiss and cry with that score. You know, they just looked absolutely overjoyed.
Piper's reactions are like the best.
They are probably the best free dance skaters here. They really embody their free dances in a way that nobody else can, the emotion that they put into it. Like, honestly, when I watch them skate, I'm like, I don't really care, like, how well they do on their patterns or how well they're doing on, like, the specific technical elements, because, like, they're just a pleasure to watch.
They have so much character and personality on the ice, and, like, before this quad, they were always kind of, you know, the third place Canadian team that were always known for just being, you know, the quirky ones, and kind of seeing them grow into their own over the last couple of years, and, you know, now they're Canadian champions, and then they medaled at four continents, and now they're here as world medalists. That's insane. Like, if they can get their rhythm dance levels a little more consistent, because that really isn't their strength at the moment. You know, if they can get that kind of to a better level overall, they might actually have a really good shot of, like, meddling at the Olympics next year. Like, they, considering how strong they are in their free dance, like you said, Yogs, like, they have the potential to score really, really highly there. And if they can just get their rhythm dance up by a couple of points, that could really distance themselves from the others.
I believe they can do it. Let's go, Piper and Paul. Well, let's talk about our favorite Italians, who deserve better than the ISU gives them.
Yes, Charlene Guinard and Marco Fabbri, who finished sixth here. Like, Guinard and Fabbri are just the textbook definition of technical excellence in ice dance, even if their lowballing in scores and placements overall might tell you otherwise. Even through their issues with training time, the Italian Federation actually hosted a domestic series of competitions, the Italian Grand Prix this season, in a kind of similar vein to Russia's domestic Russian Cup, although the Italian competitions didn't have an audience like Russia's did. So they were able to get some competition time in comparison to some of the other teams here. And you can tell, like, in the way they skated here, that they clearly had some more experience than others this year. Most of their elements were of, like, similar quality to those we'd expect to see in a regular season, maybe bar a little bit of energy towards the latter half of the free dance just because of stamina. Like, we're used to talking about how great their speed and ice coverage is. It's just top class. Their skating skills are some of the best in the field here, like, up there with Sinitsyna and Katsalapov in a regular kind of season's level of quality. They placed sixth in both segments and overall here, although just based off the quality they showed in both programs, like, I personally would have put them at least fourth, if not on the podium. I was really impressed with their free dance here, considering it was a new program. I think it's really well suited to their style of skating. They used the music from the movie Atonement and also Song for the Little Sparrow. And they plan to keep this program next year, which I'm very excited about because it was definitely, like, raw. They haven't obviously perfected and polished it yet because they've only, you know, they haven't really performed it very many times. I really like the new combination lift they do in this, the one that goes the stationary lift to the rotational spinning lift. It's just, so good. Although I kind of want them to change the end of the program because, you know, the Song for the Little Sparrow ends really dramatically and the sliding exit from that spinning move doesn't really suit that. So maybe rethink that ending, guys. Other than that, it's so good.
Okay, looking forward to the Olympics for dance. FSR has three spots.
We'll probably have Sinitsyna Katsalapov and Stepana Vorobyukin getting two of those spots. I don't think that there's going to be a lot of competition for that third spot. I think Zagorski and Guerrero probably have that third spot under wraps. There's, like, none of the up-and-coming junior teams really have the scoring potential at this point that we've seen to kind of match what ZG have put out. So I think that'll probably end up being the Olympic team. And then we have the US with three spots. So the battle between Hubble and Donahue and Shock and Bates is going to continue from what we've seen. It's the constant back and forth of, like, it's my turn. No, it's my turn. No, it's my turn. The last couple of years.
They're both going to the Olympics already, no doubt. It'll be curious to see who the US chooses for the team event.
Yeah, especially because with Shock and Bates, I feel like last season they were very much clearly favored by the US Fed, but this season, like, I mean, they're clearly undertrained, that's evident in their skating, but their free dance here and at US Nationals, it wasn't seen as favorably to, like, the judges' marks towards it weren't as generous as they were last season, like, even considering the errors that they had. I'm just interested to see the power dynamics in both in Hubble and Donahue and Shock and Bates in their continued back and forth.
And the third spot will go the Hawaii Baker, probably. So, Canada also has three spots, most likely also be the same three teams we saw here. The ice dance is really consistent, guys.
Well, it's just because a lot of these, like, with the teams with the three spots, you have clear divisions between the top teams and kind of the rest of the pack. Like, in Canada, you know, you've got Gillis and Poirier, you have Fournier, Beaudrillard, and Sorensen, then Lajoie, Lagarde. Those are the top three. There's not really any other Canadian teams I can see overtaking. I'm more interested in the fight between that one Spanish spot.
Oh, God.
Because that has been a nail-biter for this last couple of years.
I was, like, praying for Hurtado and Kelly Event to get into the top 10 here. They missed it by one. They're 11th. To get into the top 10 so we would not have to deal with this.
It's just been so frustrating to see the constant back and forth between Hurtado and Caliarvan and Smartin Diaz. It's just so annoying, like, to see the Spanish Fed just pick and choose over and over again, because they, like, obviously haven't had much competition time this season. They both did, like, a test skate and sent programs into the Federation, and out of that, they chose Hurtado Caliarvan to represent Spain at Worlds. I think that also just might have been considering they train in Russia and have had more ice time versus Smartin Diaz, who are Gabois, and obviously haven't had that same level of ice time, so...
Like, the thing is that they're both fairly matched, too. Like, both of them have, like, around the same level of scoring potential, so it's even more of a nightmare to choose between the two. So, oh god, next season. Who would have thought Spanish ice dance was the drama we actually need in ice dance?
But hey, Team Coco managed to qualify for the free here, which is so nice after they didn't make it in Saitama, and they got Japan a dance spot for the Olympics next year.
So I will be curious to see if Muramoto and Takahashi has improved enough in this past season to, like, actually be a contender here to get the spot, but most likely Team Coco will be going to the Olympics.
Yeah, especially because Muramoto and Takahashi had a pretty, like, their growth in between NHK and Japanese Nationals was quite stark. Like, you could definitely tell that they have been improving at a really steady rate. So yeah, definitely interested to see how this off season will treat them, especially considering the rhythm dance next season is blues and hip hop, like it was in the 2016-17 season. And we know that Daisuke is really confident in that kind of style of skating. Interested to see what their program will be for that. Like, it's gonna, I'm excited for that theme in general, because I feel, because 2016-17 had some really great short dances with the same kind of theme.
But the issue with Muramoto and Takahashi is their stamina and getting through a free dance, so.
And their lifts as well.
Yeah, so we'll be interested to see how that goes. I don't, like, they lost Japanese Nationals by, like, 20 points to Team Coco, so it'll be difficult to improve by 20 points in the off season, but hey, they're both season contenders, and if they have the will to do it, I know they can do it, so.
And another notable team that won one spot for next year, one that I am in particular very fond of, is Wang Liu of China. So going into this event, they hadn't been able to train with their main coaches from Gabois for most of the season because they've been training in China throughout the off and on season for this past year. That and dealing with the pressure of securing multiple spots for their home Olympics next year and dealing with significant injuries. Both of them were dealing with significant injury issues this season. Xin Yu in particular had to deal with, like, a hand fracture and back issues before Cup of China this season. And then after Cup of China, he dealt with lower back and ankle injuries. And partly because of that, they had some technical issues in both programs here, in particular in the Twizzles. And in their post-skate interviews, they expressed the regret they couldn't show better performances here. But at this point, I just want them to stay in one piece and as healthy as they can be for next year, because I really want them to have the best Olympic experience they can possibly have. Like, out of all the Chinese dance teams, they have the highest scoring potential. Even though Chen and Sun have caught up slightly in the last year, Wang Liu is still very firmly the first place team in China. So barring, like, further injury, they'll probably be assigned to compete at Beijing next year. Especially because they didn't qualify for the free dance at Pyeongchang. I really hope that they're able to have a great home Olympic experience next year, because they deserve it. All right.
Okay. Are we ready?
I'm not doing this. Goodbye.
Let's talk about the ladies event. Hey, Kite, would you like to introduce the podium?
So, for the ladies event, in first place, we had Anna Sherbakova of FSR. In second place, Elizaveta Tukdemusheva of FSR. And in third place, Alexandra Trusova of FSR. And I just want to confess that I wasn't even supposed to be on this episode until I watched the ladies event. And then I was like, no, I just have too much rage and I need to get it out in a public forum. So here I am.
Here you are.
Here you are. We welcome you greatly.
And we just want to preface by saying that in comparison to every other event here at this competition, the ladies event was by far and away the one with the results we disagree with the most, to the point that, in our opinion, none of the ladies that ended up on the podium here should have done so.
It's like, okay, so this is the first time in history, I think, of this event that Russia has swept the ladies' podium. I mean, I don't know, I think we should just come out and say it. Like, Russia should not even have been here. Like, their athletes, whatever, like, flag or non-flag they're under, just should not have been permitted to compete at this event in the first place. We'll probably cover this in more detail in the, like, logistics episode that's coming in a week or so, but within, like, a day of coming to Worlds, the Russian athletes were posting, you know, videos and pictures of themselves, you know, breaking quarantine and not social distancing and hanging out together, like, in the hotel arcade or wherever they were, and just really not even, like, pretending to follow any of the rules that the ISU had set out for this event to keep everybody safe.
Wearing masks with valves on them.
It's been over a year. Have we not figured out, like, as a planet, how we breathe? Like, is this still... is this still, like, a situation that needs to be happening? I'm just like... And then, you know, the coaches, like, publicly flouting quarantine rules or flouting, you know, social distancing or, you know, just basic, like, sanitation. Like, Zulin posted, I think, a video, because there was a rule where, you know, you weren't supposed to kind of have your hands on the boards, because they were worried about, like, germ transfer, obviously. And so he posted a video of himself, like, putting his feet up on the boards to basically just mock the rules of the event, which is just absolutely disgusting. And it just blows my mind that that kind of behavior just isn't sanctioned at all, like, isn't punished. And basically by doing that, you're just telling them, yeah, go ahead and do this, like, endanger, you know, not only yourself, but all of the other skaters and coaches here. Like, that's totally fine. We're okay with that. We're gonna let you do that.
Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, even disregarding their behavior at Worlds, I would argue that just, like, based on the way the Russian Federation has treated their skaters basically as disposable throughout this entire season, in the way that they've kept up with the same level of domestic events and have been endangering their skaters, many of which, especially in ladies, are minors. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous that they can get away with all of this with seemingly no repercussions from the ISU as a governing body. It's just really frustrating to see this kind of behavior completely swept under the rug. And in our logistics episode that will be coming out soon, we'll be talking in more detail about the Russian Federation's behavior here at Worlds and the ISU's response to this behavior.
All of that aside, like, I don't think there's really any other way you could describe how this event turned out other than corruption, which is... It sounds extreme, but let us explain why it is not. Let's talk about PCS.
We can talk about falling in your program and still beating out people on PCS who are clean. And we can talk about someone falling in their program two times, getting within 1 point of someone who had a clean skate. There's something that's, like, innately frustrating when you see the Japanese ladies and the Korean ladies, and also, like, the US ladies, like, all the other ladies. And then you see the Russian ladies, and then you see their components, and then you see that the Russian ladies keep winning at components, despite the fact that they don't have as good skating skills, they don't have the performance quality that a lot of these skaters bring to the field, they don't have the ice coverage, they don't have the pure technical skill that you are actually really looking for in a skater. And then you see that they're winning everything. They get the best grades of executions on all of their jumps. They get the highest components. And then you just wonder why. Why are the other ladies even here? If they can skate their heart out and, like, give, like, in my eyes, like, some record-breaking programs, but not break any records and not get the scores they deserve.
Like, if you look more in detail at the performances of each lady on the podium here, like, each of them had clear, significant errors present in either one or both programs that should have more thoroughly affected their scoring overall. Like, Anna Shcherbakova, who won the event, she fell in her opening quad lutz in the free, and as well as showing that, like, many of the other ladies here, that her training time and health this season has affected her skating quality overall, like, some of her elements were not in the form that we've come to expect from her, in particular her spins. Like, Anna has been known for the last few seasons to have some of, like, the best spins in the field, but here she really struggled to get through some of them, especially her flying combo spin in the free. She, like, visibly had real trouble controlling, like, the position of her body, the speed and placement of it on the ice. I think there might be an argument to be made that she still should have ended up on the podium here despite the errors that she made, like, considering her short was also well skated. But factoring in the serious errors in performance of a free, like, gold doesn't quite make sense in this context. And then you look at Elizaveta Tuktimishova, who came in silver. She also had a fall in the free and a few issues with under rotations. And then Sasha Trusova, who was third, came in 12th in the short due to serious errors, but managed to climb up to bronze after landing 2 out of 5 attempted quads in the free. Like, neither Lisa or Sasha are skaters that I would consider to be, like, you know, strong on account of their PCS skills. Like, they're both very technical skaters who rely more on their base value for placements. Both of their skating skills are not particularly strong in terms of edge quality and speed and ice coverage. Lisa's transitions into her more difficult elements aren't as complex as some of her competitors. And Sasha's performance quality, like, while improved since her junior years, still hasn't fully developed. However, it's their PCS in both of their programs here that I would say really helped them get onto this podium, like, especially in comparison to the ladies directly below them in, like, 4th to 7th place. Like, it's not particularly that they themselves were extremely overscored in PCS, it's that the ladies below them were significantly underscored in comparison when you closely examine the programs that each of these skaters put out, like, especially in comparison to skaters like Kaori and Karen and Luna, who've all put out near clean skates in the free. I just wonder how must it feel to be these skaters, these non-Russian skaters who continually put out performances that are medal worthy or record worthy and just consistently on an international standing not getting that recognition. Like, how must it feel for their mental state, for their emotional well-being, just to see the hard work they're doing and the knowledge that they have to basically be 100% perfect in order to surpass the Russian ladies, and even then it might not even be enough. It makes me angry sometimes watching how the judges reward some of these skaters when even when they skate clean or close to clean in comparison to some of the others, because it doesn't make sense, and it makes me really frustrated for those skaters and how they must be feeling throughout their entire careers.
How can, like, anybody just explain watching Kaori skate and then watching Liza skate and giving them the same in components?
Well, that's the thing, right, is that this has kind of been a building issue in ladies skating specifically, I would say, since, like, 2014. The 2014 Olympics and, like, the fiasco that was. And ever since then, it's like, well, you know, if we can get away with just politicking so hard for our ladies that it, you know, meets and then surpasses, like, corruption, then it's, like, basically where you're gonna place relatively is determined before you even, like, start skating, just based on your nationality. Yeah. And I think that that's just, I can't even describe, like, how angry that makes me, because it's like, you know, the skaters who are not from Russia, they're not blind to this. Like, they know that there's these injustices in scoring, and obviously being current competitors, there's not a lot they can do about it. Like, they can't really be vocal about it. So, like, after the free skate, for example, Kaori, who had a beautiful free skate that really should have won this event, said, you know, something about how they called, you know, the edge on her Lutz. And she said, well, they wouldn't have had to do that if I had just, you know, jumped a correct Lutz. And I feel like there's something so heartbreaking about hearing that, because it's like, you know that they know that that's not the issue. Like, the issue is not that, you know, you have some technical mistakes and that's why you're not making the podium or getting the results that you want, because it's like, you go out and you see, like, her competitors, like, they're not getting penalized for having incorrect technique, but, you know, a skater who isn't from that country has to suffer through, you know, no fault of their own, where it's like, either call everybody or call nobody.
The fact that Trusova, who had 2 falls in her free skate, got 1 point lower in components compared to Kaori and Karen, when they are supposed to be penalized when they have multiple falls and have serious error in their programs, blows my mind.
It's ridiculous. And it's not even just a problem with the Japanese ladies, or, like, you look at a skater like Luna Hendricks from Belgium, who skated, you know, a clean free, probably the best free skate of her career. You know, she only got 66 in PCS because, again, small federation, not a lot of politicking power, and her international reputation just isn't as strong because of the last couple seasons she's had with problems with injury. But you look at that free, and in comparison to some of the others, the quality is just over the moon better than what some of the other ladies who finished higher than her put out. And you just look at it and go, what are the judges, like, what programs are the judges watching? Are we watching different events? Because this does, these scores don't line up with reality.
Yeah, it's just, it's stuff like this that honestly makes me question if we're all living in the same 3D universe together and, like, sharing this experience. It's unjustifiable to me, frankly, because, you know, like you brought up Sasha Trusova, who fell, you know, she was attempting 5 quads in her free skate, fell on 2 of them. And, you know, like a skater from any other country, I mean, had fallen twice in the free skate, they would be like bottom of the top 10 at best. And that's not even like us speculating, like, you know, Rika, she was 2nd after the short, she fell twice in the free and she finished 7th.
But even disregarding Trusova's score, like, I watched Kaori skate and I was like, she's going into 1st. And then she went into 3rd. And I was heartbroken. And also just confused.
Like, I know that we usually get really angry over ladies scoring. And I feel like every kind of competition that we've covered recently has just us devolved into screaming why at these scores. But I don't think I've gotten this annoyed at ladies scoring, like, in this entire time we've been doing the podcast. Like, this is the one competition where I look at it and it's just, it's so devoid of you know, reality, and I question why I even bother watching this discipline at this point if I know that the skaters aren't going to be rewarded for what they do well and punished for what they don't. It's just, ugh, it's so frustrating as a fan of this sport.
But the other disciplines are like dance and pairs, yeah, we get it. But, like, at the very least, like, the Russians there, you know, they have the skills, like, they deserve their scores and their PCS to a degree. But, like, for ladies, it just, everything just feels so fake about this. Like, not just with the Russians, but also the scores that the other ladies get to boost the Russians up higher.
Like, if we're talking about Kari Sakamoto's scores in the free here, like, to emphasize the discrepancy, it's really easiest to directly compare her scores here to that from the last Worlds in 2019. Like, her program here was actually cleaner overall. The only error she made in her Matrix free was the Lutz Edge, and the rest of her elements were cleanly executed in, like, her usual manner, versus in 2019 when she singled the solo flip. Her base value here in 2021 was 3 points higher than it was in 2019. However, her TES overall was 3 points lower. And while she scored a 73 in PCS in 2019, she only received 67.70 here. Even at Four Continents last year, when she had several major errors in that same free skate, including a fall in the opening jump, she got 68 PCS. So she skated a near clean program here at Worlds 2021 and ended up with 67. Meanwhile, like, in comparison, we have Anna with 72, Lisa with 69, and Sasha with 66, all of which had at least one, if not multiple, errors in their program. And they scored either higher or closely to Kari's PCS.
I don't know, like, what more can she do?
Apparently she needs a Russian passport.
Like, the level of quality that we've seen from Kari time and time and again, and she's just consistently not being rewarded for it, it's so frustrating. And I feel like it's, like, multiple times I feel like we're just repeating ourselves saying that Kari was robbed, but it's gone to the point where we're seeing it so many times that it's like, well, we can't not point it out. It's right there in front of our faces. You've got someone with, like, the best double axel in the whole field and some of the best skating skills here, and you're just like,
her ice coverage is amazing. She just zooms across the rink. She goes into every jump with such speed. Her double axel, triple toe, double loop combo, like, spans half the rink. Like, what? But none of those are getting the grades of executions that they deserve.
Like, the only thing that could possibly, like, put a benefit into, like, her scoring is taking the Lutz out of the short. Because that's just, even though the Lutz has a base value advantage over something like the loop, the fact that she keeps getting dinged for that edge in both international and domestic competitions, you know, with the GOE factoring for that, with, you know, you're going to get a negative GOE if you get a call on the edge, it's just not worth it, especially when her loop is that good. Like, I don't see why they've chosen to put the Lutz in versus the loop.
But regardless, even with that Lutz edge call, she should have won.
Yeah. Let's talk about one of the other Japanese ladies that was also here, Rika Kihira, who delivered a really good short And unfortunately, the free skate kind of, I think the pressure kind of got to her.
She should have won the short
yes.
by a lot
yes.
with the performance that she gave, and she didn't. She was second to Anna Shcherbakova. Again, I would love for someone to explain to me why, in a way that doesn't involve mentioning the countries of the skaters involved. You know, it's like, even though she did do very well in the short program, she got 79. It's like just feeling like you went out there, you did the program with superior technical difficulty. She should be getting higher PCS than all of the Russians, frankly. And then seeing that it still wasn't enough, like, that can really rattle your confidence. And especially in a year where, you know, she knew very well that Japan's Olympic spots are really hinging on her because she has the highest scoring potential. And having that pressure put on you and then going into the free skate and kind of knowing, you know, what's been happening, or at least generally being aware of what's been happening. I mean, I think you're right. Like, just the pressure got to her in the free skate, and it was really unfortunate. I don't even remember the last time I've seen her fall like that on a triple axel. Because that thing has been basically, like, rock solid for the past year and a half. And it kind of devolved for a little bit into the situation where, like, are we, like, in a repeat of 2017? Like, are Japan's Olympic spots about to be in danger again?
I think it was also the pressure coming into the free. She was probably looking at how Satoko did and how, in the short, she had those problems, and knowing that, you know, the Olympic spots were on the line, and it was so critical for Japan not to be in a similar situation that they were at Pyeongchang, where they only had two ladies spots. And that pressure must have been intense going into the free, that kind of mental stress that she was under to skate clean, or clean enough to guarantee the spots. I do not envy her at all.
I am glad that she managed to keep it mostly together after her errors, and she did skate well enough to get Japan keep their three spots. Honestly, like, the breath of, like, oh, thank God, that went through me when I saw she placed sixth.
Japanese nationals won't be as heartbreaking as it was back in 2017 when they only had two spots, because that was hard to watch.
Well, if you want to talk about heartbreaking, we kind of have to talk about Satoko Miyahara.
I mean, the short program just kind of completely fell apart. And I mean, she was coming into this with really limited training and preparation, considering she's been in Canada for the last couple months. And just, I mean, you know, again, screw the ISU for making all of these skaters compete with the level of preparation that they've had and expecting the same level of competition that you would get in the usual year.
I honestly challenge you to find me a lady who has, a currently competing lady who has just the performance quality, like the expressiveness, like the awareness of, you know, her body on the ice and the awareness of the music. I challenge you to find me a lady who does that better than Satoko.
I would not be able to find you one.
One does not exist.
And the fact that she doesn't, I mean, she had errors here, obviously, but the fact that she doesn't regularly score at least in the mid-70s in PCS is just really unfathomable to me. When you have ladies breaking 70 who should not, like, should be probably, like, in the mid to low 60s if they were being scored correctly. You know, it's unfortunate that she struggled so much here, but I think my kind of, like, heartbreak for her was, again, sort of tinged with just anger at, you know, the moment yeah. that one of these ladies makes a mistake, like, it's over, like, they're just gonna throw the book at them.
I really hope that this performance at Worlds doesn't dissuade her for next season, like, going into the Olympic year, because there is a lot of domestic competition in Japan in ladies. There's a lot that could happen there.
Okay, moving on to some happier times. Karen Chen, everyone say thank you, Karen. Honestly, what is with Karen and pre-Olympic Worlds? Like, the combination is just magic. It, like, works. It's just, wow. But similarly to 2017 Worlds, Karen finished fourth here. Once again, the highest placements for ladies since, like, Ashley Wagner won her world's medal and help once again secure 3 spots at the Olympics for U.S. ladies.
I'm really glad that Karen managed to kind of hold it together here and do so well, especially because Brady, the other U.S. lady, kind of had a rough go of it. And Karen, actually, she was 3rd at U.S. Nationals this year, and she ended up being sent to Worlds over Amber Glenn, who is a silver medalist, just because her international scores were higher than Amber's in the few times that they, you know, directly competed against each other. Yeah. And that was definitely the right call here, because Karen held it together.
Karen definitely had the higher scoring potential, and she proved why. There was some questionable not calls made, because there were a couple unders that probably should have been called, but also given how low her components were, the difference basically broke even to me, so.
Yeah, I mean, you alluded to this earlier, but, like, again, someone please explain to me how she beat Sasha Trusova, who fell twice in the free skate in PCS by a single point. I think it was 66 for Sasha and 67 for Karen, who was basically clean. And Karen skated, like, in the last group, too, which is usually when you see, you know, PCS being boosted. And she didn't really get that favor at all. Honestly, if you're not, like, tearing up when Karen goes into her spiral sequence, you don't have a heart.
If you don't see her spiral sequence and then immediately think, yes, performance, at least 9 in components, I don't know who you are. Like, no, I know who you are. You're all these judges on this team.
Let's talk about the other lady that, in our ideal world, would have made the podium. Luna Hendricks.
Oh, it was so nice to see her again.
I mean, especially, you know, coming after the Olympics, we saw her at 2018 Worlds, where she did really, really well. I think a lot of us had her on our bingo cards that she could potentially be a future European medalist, or at least one of the top European ladies going forward. And unfortunately, you know, in the post-Olympic year and then last season, she had some real struggles with injury, missed a lot of competitions, and just wasn't in that form that we saw her in the Olympic year. But here, oh my God, she skated so well overall. Like, I forgot how much I loved her skating. Like, her spin positions, man. I mean, I forgot how good they were because I haven't seen her in ages. And I just, when I watched, like, her free skate, I was like, oh, that's why I'm a fan of you.
Yeah, I know she definitely suffered scoring-wise due to her not skating due to injuries, so her reputation suffered. But it was lovely to see her again. Can't wait to see her at the Olympics. She got Belgium 2 Olympic spots. I don't know if Belgium has a second lady, but hey.
I don't think they do. Or at least one that has the minimums. I don't think they have one.
Also, shout out to the Korean ladies, Yeon Kim and Haeyeon Lee. They both had, like, extremely hectic times in the lead up to this event. So they had both just competed at Korean Nationals and then the Korean Rankings competition, because the KSU decides, hey, you know what we need right before Worlds? A bunch of other domestic competitions that our skaters need to attend, or else they can't go to Worlds.
They do that every year, and it's always so confusing the amount of, like, compulsory domestic competitions they have for, in, like, domestic ranking. Surely you look at that and go, wouldn't this tire your top skaters out so much more than what is needed in a season? And the fact that they're still kind of doing that during a pandemic when, you know, social distancing levels in Korea were all over the place during this year. They've had limited ice time and just, I don't understand the KSU's decision making.
No one understands the KSU's decision making.
Like, surely they could have just done Nationals and not the ranking competition. Despite all that, I think they still skated extremely well. Both of them skated extremely well at this event. Especially because, like, Haeyeon, this was her first major senior competition as well. That's extremely impressive. And Yelim is, as well, just skated so strongly, and she really has been on such a rise at both Nationals, the ranking competition, and now it's just, we love to see it. We love to see Korean ladies flourishing.
Yes. After the short program, there was some hope that they could have secured 3 spots for Korean ladies at Beijing, but unfortunately, some mistakes in their free, they've only managed to secure 2 again, so we'll see how Korean ladies at the Olympics goes.
And shout out to Madeline Skizas of Canada, because this was the first time that I had ever seen her skate, because I didn't follow any of the domestic Canadian competitions this season. And I was really, really impressed by her. Like, this was her first major senior international competition. Like, that short program, she skated clean, which is insane, especially considering how the Canadian ladies have fared over the last couple of years. It's really nice to see someone come out with some really great skates. She kind of reminds me of Caitlin Osmond in her jumping style, because she's a clockwise jumper, but she also has the really big height in all of her jumps. And yeah, I'm excited to see her growth. She's definitely on my list of skaters to watch.
Yeah, I hadn't seen her skate either, and I honestly have been very concerned about Canadian ladies this past quad, so very excited to see the growth that she will bring, and hopefully more growth in Canadian ladies again in the upcoming quad. One last shout out we'd like to make is to May Bernadise Mate of France, who unfortunately had to withdraw during the short program after she ruptured her Achilles tendon on her first jumping pass. We hope she recovers safely.
When they were processing the withdrawal, they like replayed the injury a billion times. Like,
it was not needed.
No, absolutely not. And also, first aid didn't come and meet her out on the ice, which I believe that is protocol, that when if a skater can make it like off the ice by themselves, that they're not like concussed or had a head or spinal injury. Like, that's generally practice. If they can make it off the ice themselves, then the first aid will meet them there. But, like, she was obviously, like, could not put any weight on that foot that she hurt. Like, I question why first aid just didn't get out there and help her out on a stretcher or anything, because, yikes. I really, really hope that she has a smooth recovery process, because those kind of injuries are not kind.
Well, looking forward to the Olympics. Russia and Japan both have 3 spots for the Olympics. I have no clue who Russia is sending.
Who knows? Considering the amount of juniors that are probably going to be moving up to senior next year, who the hell knows?
For the Japanese team, Rika and Kaori have definitely proven over this past quad, they have the body of work that they should be on this team. Like, both of them are fairly consistent skaters. Kaori has been extremely consistent in this very weird season that we've had. Rika has the highest scoring potential. So it's a kind of a no-brainer there. Kaori also has been to the Olympics. She has that experience under her belt as well. So I can't imagine them not choosing Kaori. But also JSF has really dumb rules for their choosing of Olympic spots. So who knows what they'll do. But I don't know who the third spot would be. Hopefully Satoko will be better. If not, maybe Wakaba will finally be consistent next season. Reno was the bronze medalist this year at Japanese Nationals. So if she goes senior next season, she potentially could get on that Olympic team. So there's a handful of Japanese ladies who potentially could make that third Olympic spot. And honestly, not sure who it can be. Okay, moving on. The US is guaranteed 2 spots, but are eligible to win a third at Nebelhorn. So they just need to have a lady who can finish in top 7. Amber Glenn easily can do it. I'm not too concerned.
And don't forget that Alyssa is going to be going up to seniors probably next year. I mean, I don't see why she wouldn't, considering she'll be age eligible. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out in seniors and how she'll fare on that stage.
Yeah, I mean, Alyssa was, you know, she's kind of been struggling with growth a little bit this season, but from what we saw of her at US Nationals, like, she's still very capable of being top 2, top 3 in US ladies if she can skate 2 clean programs.
Korea has 2 spots. They have 4 potential ladies who can qualify for those spots, so good luck.
Yeah, Yelim, Haeyeon, Young, and Unsoo all could potentially get those spots. So the fight domestically for that is going to be extremely interesting next year and extremely stress-inducing, I feel.
Belgium and Austria both have 1 guaranteed spot, but they are eligible to win a 2nd spot at Nebelhorn. But I don't know if they have another top lady they can send. And some sad actual news here, because of May's withdrawal, France does not have a spot for ladies currently. So they will need to find a lady to compete at Nebelhorn to win that spot back. Olympic season Nebelhorn's gonna be such a blast, guys.
Oh yeah, I can't wait for the Olympic season. I'm so excited and enthused.
Let's survive the off season first.
Let's survive World Team Trophy that's happening in a few weeks.
I got a little too optimistic there that we would even make it to the off season.
Thank you for listening. We hope to see you again for our next episode, which will unfortunately cover more of Worlds, but this time the logistics side of things. So yes, look forward to that in a few weeks.
Thank you to our transcribing and quality control team, Evie as always for editing, and Gab for graphic design.
If you want to get in touch with us, then please feel free to contact us via our website, inthelowpodcast.com, or on our Twitter. You can find our episodes on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.
If you enjoy the show and want to help support the team, then please consider making a donation to us on our Ko-fi page. And we'd like to give a huge thank you to all the listeners who have contributed to our team thus far.
You can find links to all of our social media pages and our Ko-fi on our website.
And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a rating and a review if you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening. This has been Kite,
Yogita,
and Evie. Bye! See ya!
Bye!